by. We're about to begin. Good day and welcome, everyone, to the IBM Chat with the Labs conference call. Today's call is being recorded. You should have received charts for today's conference call. If you did not receive them, you may go to www.ibm.com/informix/webcast. Again, that was www.ibm.com/informix/webcast. At this time, I'd like to turn the program over to the IBM Informix Channel Marketing Manager, Mr. Gary Proctor. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Welcome, everybody, to Chat with the Labs. This is a continuing series of interaction with our R&D teams, and we have been getting great feedback on this call. I'm glad that you could take the time and call in. We have a very good speaker today that I'll introduce here in a minute. We're coming off of a very successful IOD conference. Our vice presidents of our business unit, Ambuj and Arvind, if you were there, could hear them talk about our multi-database strategies and gave Informix significant airtime in the discussions at the keynote speeches. We're very pleased from that. It really, I think, changed a lot of the mindsets of people at the conference. We have been getting inundated with partners, myself, calling in after the conference and following up on leads and trying to understand what's happening with the IDS and the strategies and positioning that's going on with our multi-database strategy within IBM. Our development teams are actively working on the Cheetah release. We are going to have our second beta drop, actually tomorrow, I believe. And the feedback from the first has been very positive. We have about 15 to 16 different companies and partners that are testing the product quite extensively already, and the feedback has just been great. Many of the new features have been very pleased, and we're hoping to get some pretty exciting information and messages to come out of our beta program. Our beta will be continuing on through the first quarter and into the second of this next year, and we hope to by the mid-year next year bring out a very successful Cheetah release for the next drop. Without further ado, I'd like to introduce Lester Knudsen, who will be speaking today on exploring the SysMaster database, new tools and tips. Lester Knudsen has been developing database applications with Informix databases since 1983. He is president of the Advanced Data Tools and IBM Informix Consulting, Training, and Tools partner specializing in data warehouse development, database design, performance tuning, Informix training, and support. Currently, Lester specializes in developing web-enabled data warehouse systems. He provides training and consulting in database design and performance tuning and is widely known in the Informix community for his extensive experience and teaching skill. Lester is also president of the Washington, D.C. Area Informix User Group, one of the largest and most active Informix user groups, and is one of the founding members of the International Informix Users Group. Lester is also a member of the IBM Gold Consulting Program. Please welcome Lester Knudsen. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. Before I dive into the technical details here, I'd like to say two things. First, I am doing this from a customer site, and I'd really like to thank Pat Cote and USDA for allowing us to do this call live. We've got a room full of about 10, 12 DBAs here who are listening in, so it's much better than doing it in the office with no audience. So thank you, guys. The second thing, and if you have the slides and look at slide number 3, I'm a big user group fan. And one of the things our user group does every year, every other year, is the Informix user group form. And we're really pleased with this year's form. It's December 8th and 9th. One of the key things is we have both Arvind and Ambuj speaking doing keynotes at the forum. And this is, as I understand it, one of the first user groups Ambush has actually been out to speak at, which just shows his commitment to inform its users. One key note I want to make is the hotel discount that we have expires tomorrow. So if you are thinking about going, you need to get your hotel reservations by tomorrow. On the fourth slide, I have a list of all the sessions we have planned. We've got, I like to say, we're able to pick the best sessions that have occurred during the year and some new ones and put them on here at the user conference. Last year in Atlanta, when we did this, we had about 180 people, and we had more Informix vendors and sponsors than at any other conference. The next slide has the list of sponsors. We're very excited with the support we've gotten from organizations using Informix and willing to step up and sponsor a user group meeting. And the last slide is just a little bit about where to go to register. And I'd really encourage you to do it. This is put on by Informix users. It's basically my local user group board. We get together and we plan it. And one of the comments Nick made to me, which I think is really important, he said, you know, what he likes about the forums is not just the sessions, but the chance to sit there and share stories and experiences with other DBAs and other Informix users. So starting at slide 7, this talk is going to focus on the SysMaster database and how you can use it to monitor and tune your Informix server. And sort of a first question is, what is a SysMaster database? I'm sure everybody's seen it out there. Some people have messed with it. I actually got questions yesterday from people who knew this was going on, and it was kind of fun to see the kind of questions, and I'll try and answer a few during this presentation. But I started way back doing basic programming, and I used to do peeks and pokes into memory, where you'd write a statement to go out and peek into memory, and I sort of liken the SysMaster database is a database that peeks into the internal shared memory structures of an Informix server. And it gives you, as a DBA, a user, a way to write SQL, which we all know and love, to actually get at some of the internal guts of what's going on in the server. On slide 8, I have sort of a picture of the three segments of memory. You have the resident segment, the virtual segment, the message segment. And in the resident segment are a bunch of control structures. The SysMaster database is basically a view into those control structures, but it's presented as a database, so we can use SQL to go against it. Slide 9, the SysMaster database, there are four areas that this talk is divided into, and it contains basic information about the server and overall server performance. It contains information about your DB spaces and chunks, which chunks are the most active. It contains information about databases and tables. One of the things I'm doing this week out here at USDA is a data warehouse review, and we started off this morning with taking a look at some queries I'd run on the SysMaster database to look at table I/O and find out which tables are being used and which tables are not being used, and which indexes are being used and which indexes are not being used. That's all available in the SysMaster database. And then the last thing it has is information about your users and sessions, and I have some new stuff on that I'll get to at the end. So the basic objective of this is how to use the SysMaster database to help you monitor and tune your database. If we jump to slide 11, there are a couple of caveats. The SysMaster database is not a regular database. And one comment I get back from folks sometimes is some of the tables can be slow to access. Why is that? Well, if you look at it, a lot of the tables are really views to make the internal structures easier for us to write SQL queries against. some of the views are extremely complex, and some tables can be very large. I have a site that has over 1 million locks, and doing a query against syslocks is really a six-table join when you look at it underneath the view, and that takes a bit of work. The other thing that happens with the SysMaster database, and syslocks is a good example, some of the SysMaster database uses unbuffered logging, and so some of the views create temp tables with unbuffered logging, and that takes a little bit of disk I.O. It's not the reading of the data that takes any impact, but it's creating those temp tables for the views. The good part about the SysMaster database is doing queries against it has no impact on the performance of the server. It's just another user doing a simple query. Now, a couple of things you can't do is update the SysMaster database. One question I've had repeatedly is, can I go change the owner of a table by updating the SysMaster database? No. It's a read-only database is the way to think about it. You can't do a DB schema on it. You can't drop the tables in the SysMaster database. On slide 13, the isolation level for the SysMaster database is dirty read. Now, this is sort of a nice little contradiction. The database uses unbuffered logging, but your isolation level for any queries against it is dirty read. That means you're not going to lock anybody out by querying against it. It also means the data may be inconsistent and change as you're running queries against it, which in one sense is a good thing. There's no performance impact to other users by running queries against it. Now, you can create triggers and stored procedures. One of the first things I tried to do way back when version, I was actually in the 6 beta program when it came out, was to create a trigger to tell me when the DB space was filling up. That trigger never fired. And that's because these tables are not updated with normal SQL. What you have to do is pull to check for changes. The other thing you can do is create stored procedures in the SysMaster database. The one caveat there is every time you do an upgrade, make sure you save a copy of those stored procedures because the SysMaster database may be dropped and recreated when you do an upgrade. So it's a good idea to keep your stored procedures someplace else, but they do run in the SysMaster database. Another caveat is the SysMaster database may change. I'm going to talk about some undocumented tables, and I'm sure I've got a couple of folks from the labs here, and you guys may cringe at some of this. I've been really impressed, though, at how well everything has worked from version 7. My scripts have been fairly constant. There are a few minor changes over the years. But most of the scripts that I'm going to present here will work all the way back to 7 up to 10. And you just have to watch out every time there's an upgrade for a few little things. But it's not been a big issue. The next slide has sort of what goes on into creating the SysMaster database. I'm going to skip over this to get into the meat of the stuff. One interesting table I want to point out is flags underscore text in the SysMaster database. This has interesting descriptions to interpret some of the flags. And so if you're like me and you poke around and explore stuff, this was an interesting table to look at to see what some of the flags were and what they meant. Okay, first section here, and I'm on slide 18, is the server configuration. There are four tables I'm going to talk about, sysconfig, syslogs, sysprofile, and sysvpprof. Sysconfig is very much like your onstat minus C, and most of the SysMaster tables actually have onstat equivalents. This prints out your current configuration. It has the original configuration at boot time, what effectively is in use right now. So if you've done an on-mode command to change something like the number of CPUs, that will show up in the effective column. And then it has the default configuration. This is a good way if you want to go do a query And the next slide, 20, is a very simple query to go get the effective values from your sysconfig. And it shows you basically what your onconfig file looks at. And this is the internal representation of that file. It's very good if you're developing applications and you want to make sure that there are enough logs out there. You can run a query against this to see if there are enough logs for your application. Or if you have some other requirement for your application, like a certain number of buffers or a certain number of locks, this is a way to go out and check that before you deploy an application. Syslogs has the same information as onstat-l. This has your logs and which ones are used, backup, the current ones. There's a very simple query on 23, slide 23, that goes through the logs and shows you what's there. And slide 24 has the example output. The most important one of these four tables, I think, is sysprofile. This is onstat-p plus sum, I like to say. This has a number of extra features. There are two fields in this view. One is the name of the profile element, and the second one is the value. And these are reset to zero every time Informix is shut down or started up, or if you do an onstat-z, they are also reset to zero. But if you look on slide 26, I have a list of the values here. This is where you can find out things like how many sorts are you doing? How many sorts are in memory? How many sorts are being done on disk? How many disk reads? How many disk writes? How many buffer reads? How many buffer writes are you using? One I like here is you can get foreground writes, LRU writes, and chunk writes, all through simple SQL. And if you do an onstat-p, you'll see certain names above the columns. These are very similar to the names used in sysprofile. And so you can correlate onstat-p and sysprofile. And this is a way to get a lot of your information through SQL instead of what I used to do in version 5 was onstat or tbstat back then, minus P, and grep an awk to try and get all kinds of stuff. I haven't done an awk script on that in years. So slide 28 is an example of what I like to do is select name, value from sysprofile, and you can put your own values that you're interested in. At one time, this is a set of values I was interested in. In data warehouse world I'm in now, I'm more interested in things like sequential scans and sorts and things like that. So you can basically replace this, and that's something you can run, you know, once a day, every day, over point in time, and see what the stats are for your server. And slide 29 is the SQL output for that. The what percent of your I.O. is from buffers? Just like with onstat-p, you can write an SQL script to calculate that. And slide 30 is an example of a script where I read the values from disk reads and buffer reads and disk writes and buffer writes and calculate a percent for that. So you can basically script that same output instead of having to grep and awk it through the onstat. And 31 is an example of the SQL output for that. SysVPProf has your virtual processors, and this identifies what the virtual processors are, what the class of that processor is, and then how much user and system time that processor has been running. I have a very simple query on slide 33 to get this. Slide 34 has the output, and it gives you an idea of what your virtual processors are on the system and how much user and system CPU time they're taking, which is kind of interesting to track over time. I once had a DBA come to me. This was a dedicated data warehouse server, and he kept saying, something's wrong on, and it's using all the CPU. I had to reply, that's what it's supposed to do. This is a dedicated data warehouse server. On it, it's supposed to be using all the CPU. It's supposed to be doing all the work. One undocumented table that I really like, and this is on slide 35, is sys shim mem values. This has a number of interesting things in it. One thing it has is the time of the last boot, the time your Informix server was started. And that's in the column SH boot time. It also has the time the statistics were last cleared, last time someone ran an onstat minus Z. And so if you're like me and like to calculate ratios, and you want to know how long your server's been up so I can tell how many buffer reads I do per hour or per minute, this is where you can get those times to then write SQL queries to go calculate how many buffer reads am I doing per minute. I think it's really amazing on some of these warehouses to be able to go to folks and say, you know, you're doing a lot of reads or a lot of writes or a lot of sequential scans per minute here. And this is where you can get that information. One of the questions somebody emailed me yesterday was how to get the time a server has been up from onstat, like you do in onstat minus P. On the next slide, 36, I have two queries using DBinfo to convert the boot time and the time the statistics were last cleared into date time functions. Everybody should know DBinfo. It's a built-in Informix command that takes a value and converts it to something else, and there are a number of nice things it does. One of the functions is UTC to date time, where it takes Unix time and converts that to a date time, and that's what this is doing. The values in SH boot time are in Unix time, which is basically a number of seconds since some odd time way back in the beginning. So again, this is undocumented, all the disclaimers with that, but it's something I've found very, very handy and I hope stays around here for forever. Okay, the second part of this talk is on DB spaces and chunks. And there are a couple key things. One is just knowing what your DB spaces are and what your chunks are. But I think more important is knowing what is the I/O by chunk, which chunks are getting hit. And I tend to, in our data warehouse environments and in our OLTP environments, really monitor this because that tells me, do I have too many tables in that chunk? Do I need to spread the load out? Now, we have an interesting situation here in one of our big data warehouses where we fragment by month. So every month, the chunk that gets the most I.O. changes. And it's kind of important to know what's on that chunk. And as a new month rolls around, you can sort of anticipate which chunk is going to get the most I.O. and to find out what else is in that chunk, because that's where most of the I.O. is going to be. The fourth table I really like is syschunk free. This tells you the free space by chunk. And I use this quite a bit when I'm planning table reorganizations. A lot of times you'll come up and say, you know, I really need to take this table and reorganize it because it's got too many fragments, or maybe I need to move it to a different chunk. And you do a alter init to reorganize it, and it comes back fragmented. And the reason that it comes back fragmented is there may not have been enough free contiguous space in the new chunk to put it in one contiguous space. So looking at syschunk free allows you to figure out where you have big spaces that are free that you can then reorganize things into. So let's talk about sysdb spaces. This has all your DB spaces, the name, the owner, And in version 10, the page size, this is really critical, and one of the things I'm working on is updating a lot of my scripts. I'll probably end up with two versions on a lot of them, one for version 10, which has to take into account the fact that in one server you can have different DB spaces with different page sizes. And by the way, just to tell you guys here at Informix, that's one of the best features. I have a system that we did a little benchmark on. It had a 13K record size. And we put that into a big page size DB space, and we got a 25% improvement on that one. Just simple web queries to look at the data in that record. I was at another site where they didn't have something quite that big, and they had a very fixed benchmark, and we made some DB spaces bigger and ran their fixed benchmark, and what surprised them was even though the times didn't change because it was a timed benchmark, the CPU usage on the server dropped by about 20%. So that is a really nice performance feature in version 10 if you haven't looked at that. This also tells you the first chunk and whether it's mirrored and the status of the chunk. You notice at the bottom of this view on slide 38, there's a field there called flags, and that's a small integer. If you look at the SQL that creates the Sysmaster database in these views, what you'll see is that field called flags is really a bunch of bit values, and is mirrored, is blob space, is temp are all from that flags field, and they basically get converted by a stored procedure that says, looks at the bits in the flags field and converts them for you to a 1 or a 0, 1 being yes, 0 being no. It's a very elegant way to take a look at this data. SysChunks also has the page size in 10. I noticed on my server when I did this on SysDB spaces, it's an integer. SysChunks, it's a small int. I don't know if that's there on purpose or something. One of the reasons I like SysChunks is it's in an SQL. You can run SQL script against SysChunks and SysDB spaces to recreate your server. We have a customer up in St. Louis that had about 3,000 chunks, and they were moving to a new server, and what we wanted to do was recreate that server to look exactly like their old server. I wrote a couple of simple queries against SysDB spaces and SysChunks, got all the information out, and I actually had the SQL generate the on-space commands to recreate the whole server. And this is where you can get that information from. There's some more information on SysChunks on slide 40. SysChunk.io has the IO by chunk. This is much like your onstat minus capital D. Page reads, page writes, mirrored page reads, mirrored page writes. Some really good information here. And then SysChunk free has the chunk number, the extent number in the chunk, the start address of free space, and the length of free space. And what you're really looking for is that length field, because that tells you how much free space and pages you have that's contiguous, that where all the pages are together in one spot. So if you're doing a reorg, that's what you want to look at. So how much DB space is free? One of my complaints about onstat minus D is it gives you the DB spaces at the tops, but it only tells you how much is free down below at the chunks, and if you have multiple chunks for a DB space, you got to go do the math to add it up. Here's a simple query on slide 43 that goes out and looks at your DB spaces and does the math for you. So it sums up how many pages are free and gives you a percent free. And I get emails every night from several of my systems, and this is one of the scripts that they run every night. So we get a heads up on, are we filling up a DB space too fast? And it's really helpful. This is something you can run at night, have the output in a cron job, then email to you. And you could even do some logic here where you could say, well, don't tell me unless I'm more than 75% full. Especially if you have 3,000 DB spaces, you might want to do that. This is an example on slide 44 of the SQL output of that script. How much blob space is free on 45 and the output on 46? Where are blocks of free space? This is looking for contiguous space. This is slide 47. And the output of that, as you can see here in the output, I have a DB space here with multiple chunks. Chunk 4 has the biggest free space. Chunk 3 has free space, but it's very fragmented. And so this gives you an idea of how to plan for your reorgs. What chunks have the most I.O.? The way I do this is do a union between the primary chunk and the mirror chunk to get them all together so that you can see by primary, by mirror, where your reads and writes are by chunk. And as everybody knows, what you want to do is have that spread out across your chunks as much as possible. The better you spread it out, the better the load balance on your server will be. What is the status of chunks? This is a long script that I like to run that gives me the status. And I actually run a shorter version of it where all I look for is that is offline equal one. I was at a site once, this is several years ago, and they used Informix mirroring. And this was great. This is server had been running for a couple of years. I just happened to do an onstat minus D, and I suddenly saw a D in the status column. And a chunk had been down for about a month, and no one had noticed it because of the built-in Informix mirroring. This allows you to, when you have a lot of chunks, to write a query to go poll and see if a chunk is offline and alert you to that. And then on 53, these are going to be on my website this weekend. I have two scripts, make DB spaces script and make log script.sql. They're kind of long, so I didn't include the scripts here in this presentation, but check back after this weekend at my website, and they'll be out there for version 9, and I'm working on an upgrade to them to version 10. They go out and recreate all your DB spaces and the onSpace commands to recreate your DB spaces. And they go out and recreate all your logs and the onFrams commands to recreate all your logs. And it's basically getting that information from the SysMaster database. Now, the third part of this talk is on database and table. And this is where you start drilling into what I think is one of the key questions, which tables have the most I.O. and which tables have the most extents, which tables are fragmented. And you might get a lot better performance if you reorganize them into fewer extents. There are five tables here that we're going to talk about, SysDatabases, which has all your databases, SysTables, SysExtents, SysPTProf, has your table I.O. and your index I.O. This is kind of interesting. It has your partition I.O. So if you're on version 9 and above where the default is detached indexes, your index I.O. will show up here. And I'm actually using that right this week to go through and look at some indexes that we might be able to eliminate because they're not being used. And I'll talk about that more later. And then SysTab info is an undocumented one that I really like, and I'll get to that in a minute. So SysDatabases. This has your database, who created it, when they created it, and some information about the logging of that database. SysTables has your tables, the owner of the table name, the part num, which is a table ID, which you can also get by using DBInfo, the DB space that that table is in. Now, if you have a table that's not fragmented, you'll only have one part num. If you have a table that is fragmented, you'll have several rows in this, one for each fragment. That's if you do round robin or fragment by expression. And you can tell which DB space you're looking at by looking at that part num, and I'll show you a DBInfo command that will translate that in a bit. SysExtents has the extents. This is very much like OnCheck minus PE, and it's much easier to run than OnCheck minus PE. It doesn't lock anything when you run it. It goes out and gives you your data, DB space, database, the table, the start address of an extent, and the size of the extent. And SysPTProf has things about the I.O. It has number of locks, number of lock waits, deadlocks, timeouts. And then it has things called IS reads and writes. I like to call the IS ones. These are the record level reads and writes. It has buffer reads and writes, which are reads and writes from the shared memory buffers. And then it has page reads and writes. Another real favorite of mine here is sequence scans. This tells you what tables are having sequential scans. And you can use this to monitor your server and say, maybe I need an index here on a table that I don't have. Sometimes sequential scans are the best way to get data, but this sort of gives you a clue. If you have a table that is quite large and has a large number of buffer reads and has a large number of sequential scans, that's something to go look at. And then SysTabInfo has some things about the table. One that I've used here is it has the current serial number value. Now, that's going to be changing, but it does have that. It has the number of extents that a table has. It has the first extent size and the next extent size in pages for that table. It has the number of pages allocated. And then on slide 61, it has the number of pages used. It has the number of data pages. So you can say of the information in this table, how many data pages are actually used. And it has the number of rows. So, a couple of queries. Slide 62. I have a query here called DBList, which goes out, and this is an example of using DBInfo to convert the part num to a DB space. So you get a nice, friendly DB space name instead of a number there that really doesn't mean much to us. Gets you your database name, the owner, whether it's logged, whether it has buffered logging or regular logging. Now, I once had a DBA. This is, you all know the rule about you don't create databases in the root DB space. He took this script and ended up writing a script to go out every night and see if there was a database in the root DB space not created by Informix and then dropped it. Don't recommend you do that, but that's the kind of way thing you can automate with this. Here's the SQL output of running the database command. What's the size of a database? This is a fairly common question people ask me when you're trying to plan things, and there are a number of ways to get this. One way I like to do it is look at PE size, which will give you the total number of pages that are in a database. And this goes out and sums all the tables and sums the PE size to get the total size of a database. Now, you need to multiply that by your page size to get the size in gigabytes or megabytes or whatever you need there. What tables have extents? This is, I think, one of my favorite queries, and I end up running it quite a bit. It gets the database, the table, a count of the number of extents, and the sum of the size of that table. And it orders it by the count so that you can go out there and look at, now, which tables do I need to worry about? This is slide 65. Slide 66, I have an example of the output. And so if this was on a little test system, but I would sit here and look at this and say the table zip in the ZIP 7 database that has 50 extents, I might want to look at reorganizing that. And this gives me a heads up on that. How to calculate what the new extent size should be. Now, this script has a lot of caveats. You need to put your own numbers here. But this is one I wrote to go out, and it counts up the number of extents, the size of the current page used, and then you need to multiply it by a couple of things. And this is where you need to change the number. The first number there is I multiply it by 2. Now, that 2 needs to be your page size. So if you're on AIX or Windows, you would put 4 there instead of 2. If you had, in version 10, built a page size, you would put that page size there instead of 2. But this gives you the number in KB, and then you need to add a growth factor. And my rule of thumb in planning a system has always been to try and get everything to fit into one extent per year. So typically when I'm planning out a new database, I sit there and ask the question, how much data is going to be here in the first year? And that's how big I try and make my first extent. And then I take my next extent size, which is what the second part of the calculation here is how much data are you going to add each year? And for this example, I use 20%, so I put in 0.2. But if it's a table that's going to add 50%, you put in 0.5 there. And use that to calculate what your next extent size should be. Now, I realize that's in an ideal world, and not every situation, you know, can make extents that big. But it's just a good guideline I've found over the years to try and keep in mind. Try and get your table so you get one extent per year. And then you don't really realize this till after you've had a system running for 5 or 6 years. But where I learned this was back when version 5 came out. About 5 years after Turbo had been out, I spent that whole year going around doing consulting, basically reorganizing tables because people had gone with the default extent size, and after about 5 years, people started having problems. And so it was a very interesting year for me. By the end of that year, I had the reorg down pat. But it's painful to do it because oftentimes if you don't have free space, it means taking your database down, unloading data, recreating tables, and rebuilding it. And this is sort of a formula you can use to help you rebuild it. Slide 68 has the SQL output for that. Now, what tables have the most I.O.? This is, I think, one of the important ones, and I use this all the time. This week I'm doing a data warehouse review workshop, one of the things I'm doing, and we're looking at this, which tables have the most I.O. I tend to look at buffer reads and buffer writes because I feel like that gives you the total picture of reads and writes from a table. Page reads and writes only gives you the reads and writes that actually come from disk. The other thing I look at here is sequential scans, because that tells me very quickly what tables have the most sequential scans, and maybe I need an index on them. Maybe I don't, but it gives me a starting place to go look at. And this is sort of the output of a shortened version of that on slide 70. Slide 71, this is a script that just goes out and looks at sequential scans. And here all I'm doing is scanning sysptprof looking for where sequential scans are greater than zero, and summing that up by table. Very short, quick way to go find out which tables have sequential scans. Okay, the fourth part of this presentation is user information. And there's SysSessions, which has information about your sessions, SysSession Profile, which has statistics about users, SysLocks, and SysWaits. Now, this is very dynamic. As a user connects and disconnects, their sessions will go away. So you can't sit there at the end of the day and run a query on this table and see all your user activity for the day. What you see is what's going on right now. As soon as someone disconnects, you may not be able to see their information after that. So if you want to get a snapshot for a whole day, what I tend to do is run a script that unloads this data every hour. Now, that only gives me an hourly snapshot, but that at least gives me a good feel for what's happening over the course of the day. SysSessions is much like your OnStat-G SES. It has your username, the Unix process ID, the host name they came from. TTY port is from the old days when we all connected up via dumb terminals. The FE program is not the name of the program. I've had several people ask me this. Can I go see the 4GL program that's being run? That's not the name of the 4GL program. That's the name of how they're connecting. And so it will be something like they're connecting by the ODBC driver or whatever the method of connecting is. There are a whole bunch of flags on slide 74, which are kind of interesting. Is the user waiting on something? And is the user in a critical section of code? Those are the ones I look at. If they're in a critical section of code, that means they're updating something, and you want to be careful with going out and just yanking their cords on their terminal if they're in the middle of doing that. Are they waiting on a buffer or a lock or a latch? If a user comes to you and says, my session's hung, this is one of the things to go look at and see if they're waiting on something and then figure out what they're waiting on. SysSessProf, this is one of those that's hard to say, is like your OnStat-G SES, but it has by active user session, that is, people who are on right now, how many reads, how many writes, how many locks they've held, how many lock requests they've had, how many deadlocks they've had, how many deletes, whether they've had rollbacks, how many buffer reads, how many buffer writes, how many sequential scans have they had, and then what I really like are how many sorts. How many disk sorts, and what is the max disk sort space they've had to use. A real interesting ratio here is to look at total sorts to disk sorts. John Miller has some really good information in one of his talks in the chat with the labs earlier this year on looking at that. Total sorts will tell you how many sorts they have done. Disk sorts will tell you how many times that sort had to spill over to disk because it didn't have enough memory. And there's some really nice new parameters if you go look up John Miller's talk on how to tune that so that more sorts can happen in memory than on disk. Max sort disk space is also kind of helpful because this gives you a guideline for, well, do you have enough sort space out there for people to use, or do you need to add some more temp DB space? Number of logs that a person has used. SysLocks is a view into the log table, OnStat-K. However, it has a table name in there, so you don't have to go translate it. This is the only real SysMaster view that I think is a bit slow to perform because it's a very complex query if you look at what goes on behind the scenes here. And I played with rewriting it myself, and I haven't been able to get it any faster than the view. So It's a really good one, though, if you can be patient with it, especially if you have a million locks on your system and a very active OLTP system. It has the types of locks in slide 78. I have the types of locks listed. Sys session waits will tell you who is waiting on something. This is slide 79. Now, some examples. One of the very first scripts I wrote was this dbwho.sql. I was a DBA out at a site, and we were supporting a development environment with about 80 developers, and I kept having to make changes to a database, and I would need to kick all the developers out of that database so I could make the change. And this is what I wrote to go find out who's logged into what database, the username, the workstation they were coming in from. So if I was really mean, I could telnet into their workstation and do a kill on their process if they were preventing me from updating the database so they could keep doing development. There's an example here on slide 81 of putting this in a shell script using a HERE document. I have another presentation on how to do this, so I'll skip over this right now. Just a quick on slide 82, syssessions.sql goes out and gets all the sessions out there and converts using a function L2Date to convert the start time into a date time from a Unix time of when that session started. On slide 83, I have an example of looking to see who is waiting on resources. And in this example, I need to redo this example because I ran three queries and locked one, and then I show up there as waiting for a lock. Now, one of the questions that I get asked quite a bit is, how can you tell how much CPU time a user is using? And there's not an easy way to do that, and I actually spent a bit of time with John Miller trying to figure this out one time. Since an ONINIT is a multi-threaded environment, it doesn't keep track of CPU time by thread. So what I've found the best way to tell who is using the most resources is to look at buffer reads, buffer writes, and lock requests. And I've done various things, add all these three up, come up with a formula that way. If you're in a data warehouse situation, lock request is less important. If you're in an OLTP situation, that might be more important. But this gives me sort of a ballpark of who's using the most resources. Buffer reads and buffer writes will tell me who's doing the most I/O on a server. And it's a good way of identifying who your top users are. In our data warehouse environment here, this is a very good way to go find out which users are running the biggest queries at any one point in time. Just go look at buffer reads, since they don't do any writes. And that will tell you which users are running the biggest queries. Now, some undocumented extras here. There's a field called sys-trans that has the pointer to where a transaction is in the logical logs. This used to be real important to me back in version 7. With dynamic logs, it's actually, I haven't used this in a couple of years now. The work Informix has done on dynamic logs has really been great. But I used to worry a lot about, was a user about to fill up their share of logs and create a long transaction? And looking at this table would help me determine that, and actually I could set up alerts by polling it to tell when someone was at, let's say, 40%, which meant they might hit 50%, and if that's what I had my high water mark set to, they would fill up the logs. And my virus scanner just started. Let me close it here for a minute. Sorry about that. So on slide 86, I have a query that goes out, lists your users, tells you the session ID, and tells you what log they're in, and if they had a transaction, the TX log begin would tell you what log their transaction began at. So then you could sort of get a feel for, well, I know I have this many logs, and they're using up this many logs. Is a long transaction about to happen? Now, a really interesting table that I've started using quite a bit that's also undocumented is SysSQExplain. This has a couple of things in it. It has the SQL statement that a user is running, and it has the estimated cost. This is the optimizer's estimated cost. And where I've used this is in several cases I've been out helping sites do performance tuning, and they're sort of like, we have 300 programs with thousands of queries, and we don't know where we should even begin. And so what I usually do is say, well, let's just run your system for a day, and I'll sit here, and I'll run queries against this table, and I will order it by SQX estimated cost, and then look at the statements that have the highest cost. And then, after doing that for about a day, we'll go say, let's find the programs that have these SQL statements in them, and that's where we'll start optimizing. This gives me a way of doing a triage. When I come into a site that has thousands of programs and they say, we don't even know where to begin on performance tuning. So you can take a look at this in a data warehouse situation like we have here. This allows you to tell which Brio queries the user is running that cost the most and gives you a way to then say, these are the queries we need to go optimize. Now, sometimes you can optimize the query. Sometimes it's optimizing it by refragmenting the table. Sometimes it's optimizing it by adding an index. But this gives you a good way of looking at that. Here's a very simple SQL statement to display the SQL that a user is running on slide 88. The one caveat here is if the SQL statement doesn't fit into that variable, you'll get multiple lines here for a user. So let's say I had a 100-page SQL statement and I was running it. I would have multiple records in this table, and SQX underscore CONBNO is a sequence to put those back together. That tells you the order of those SQL statements so you can put them back together and decode your SQL statement. And then I have an example of the output from that in slide 89. How to find the expensive queries. This is the example I was talking about earlier, where I just do a select on SQX, estimated cost, SQX, SQL statement, order it by the cost in descending order, so the one that costs the most comes up at the top. The other thing you want to do here and is not only look at the order, but oftentimes how often an SQL statement is run. I will sometimes take this data, put it into a temp table, and then at the end of the day, go do a count by SQL statement and order up and total up the cost. Sometimes it may not be the top SQL statement, the one that has the highest cost, but one down the list that's run 1,000 times a day. That is really the one you need to optimize. And so by capturing this data, putting it into a temp table, and then looking at the SQL statement and the cost together, you might see a different way of doing a triage on your data. So What do I like to do with this? One of the things I'm a big advocate of is, and this is slide 91, is to build your own monitoring system. Now, there's some great tools out there to do that. Server Studio has some phenomenal stuff in it. If you come to the forum, I'm going to be doing a talk on how to do this in Server Studio. You can also roll your own. And what I like to do is collect data from Sysmaster and from the Unix SAR command. I have a set of data that I like to collect hourly, daily. And when I collect it daily, one of the keys I've found is to do an onstat minus z after you collect the data. So your stats, your table I/O stats and things like that are zeroed out every night. I once made the mistake of doing that before I collected the data, and then I ended up with zero data, which was no fun. So do it after you collect the data. And then, since this is SQL, you can write very simple unload statements. I mean, you can turn any one of these queries against the Sysmaster database into an unload statement. And then take that data and load it into a historical database. I do a lot of work with data warehouses, and one of the things I like to say is this is building a data warehouse of your server performance. So you can then load it into a historical database and use it to do review and analysis. And that is really helpful to allow you to do a big picture view of your data. Couple of things I'm wrapping up here at the end. On slide 92, this script and the presentation are going to be at my website. But I will give everybody a heads up. I'm on travel right now. Won't be back till Saturday, so probably it won't be until Sunday, because I spent last night in my hotel room updating some of the stuff here. So probably Sunday before you get the latest version of the scripts out at my website. If you go out there right now, you'll see some earlier versions from the IBM conference and the IIUG conference. Another really good place to go is the Washington Area Informix User Group and the International Informix User Group. My favorite area on the International User Group is the software repository. If you haven't gone and looked at that, there's some phenomenal stuff. And I owe a huge debt of gratitude to people who post stuff there, Art Cagle, you know, John Miller, John Leffler. That's how I learn stuff is from things other people post, and I'd really encourage you to go look at that. And if you have some cool little script, I'd be more than happy to, you know, send me an email about it, and I'd be more than happy to help see it get posted too. Last reminder about our forum. This is really going to be an exciting event, and I would really encourage you to come. For international visitors, just a heads up here, we're a simple user group. We don't have any administrative people to do stuff. The idea of getting checks from people coming from overseas, we decided was too complicated. So we basically said anybody who comes in from overseas can come to the forum for free. All you need to do is have a ticket that says you came from overseas. And go ahead and register so we know you're coming. I'm a little bit worried we may fill up, but you don't have to pay for it as long as you're coming in from overseas. Last year, I think we had about 8 or 10 people from overseas at the forum in Atlanta, and it was great to have that influence there. And then last but not least, on slide 94, I have my email address. Just a heads up, I travel a lot. If you guys send me queries or questions, I may not get back to you right away, but I do try and get back to everybody who sends me an email with a question. And with that, I'll turn it back over to the operator.
Thank you. At this time, we'll conduct a brief electronic survey. After I finish reading the entire question and all the possible responses, please answer by firmly pressing the star key followed by the number on your touch-tone phone that corresponds to your choice. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signals to reach our equipment. There will be a brief pause between each question to to allow everyone an opportunity to respond. Question 1. The level of technical detail in this presentation, star 1, about right, star 2, not technical enough, star 3, too technical. Again, question 1. The level of technical detail in this presentation was star 1, about right, star 2, not technical enough, star 3, too technical. And we'll pause for just a moment. Question 2. The speakers for this teleconference were star 1 for excellent, star 2 good, star 3 fair, and star 4 poor. Again, question 2. The speakers for this teleconference were star 1 excellent, star 2 good, star 3 fair, star 4 poor. Question 3. Overall teleconference rating, star 1 excellent, star 2 good, star 3 fair, star 4 poor. Again, question 3. Overall teleconference rating, star 1 excellent, star 2 good, star 3 fair, and star 4 poor. And question 4, would you like someone from IBM to contact you regarding IDS version 10 or Cheetah? Star 1 for yes, star 2 for no. Again, question 4, would you like someone from IBM to contact you regarding IDS version 10 or Cheetah? Star 1 for yes and star 2 for no. That would conclude our electronic survey. At this time, we will open lines for questions. If you do wish to signal for a question, you may do so by pressing star 1 on your touch-tone phone. Again, that is star 1 on your touch-tone phone to signal for any questions. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signals to reach our equipment. Again, that is star 1 at this time for any questions, and we'll pause momentarily. Our first question will come from Zachy Klopman. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hi, Lester. It's been a pleasure in hearing you. And I have a question which is not exactly related to this, but it's somewhat. I was wondering whether you have a similar, I mean, actually it's two questions, one more specific than the other. A, do you have a similar one on all the system tables for in the database level? And the other one, which is a little more specific, is how can I do a rename partition? That's something that I have can miss within the tables. Thank you.
Thank you. I haven't done a talk in years on sys tables, and that's an interesting question. I was actually thinking about that, and I'm going to take your question to mean there might be interest in doing that in the future. I think I did one at a user group meeting probably way back when, 15 years ago maybe, on version 5. And then the second question, let me make sure I understand it. What you'd like to do is you have a table that's fragmented by partition, and you want to rename that partition?
Rename some of those partitions, yes.
Have you done a alter init to the new partition?
They're on the system. There are plenty of them.
Okay. looking at some of the other folks here. Everybody's shaking their head. So I don't have a quick answer on that.
So it's not something that you go into the sys tables and do an update inside the sys tables over there to change and rename the name.
Never, ever do that. I would strongly advise, and I said that at the very beginning, is never update the sys tables. That would be extremely dangerous if you could, and I have seen versions where it's allowed you to do that. You run the risk of corrupting things when you do it, because these are internal control structures. So I would not recommend doing that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Sorry about that.
Our next question will come from Herman Morales. Your line is open.
Hi. When you create a database, you get a special tables like sys-tables, sys-columns, etc. Sometimes you get too many extents for these special tables. The first question is, the high number of extents of these special tables affect the performance? If the answer is yes, how can you reduce the number of extents for these special tables? Thank you.
Okay. The first question is, no, they do not affect performance. And the reason is, the sys tables are cached. So they are in memory in your data dictionary caches. And so Informix almost never goes out to disk once somebody has opened up a database. So there's no performance impact there. And I basically don't worry about that. That's one of the areas when I'm looking at extents, if I see extents on the system table, I really do not worry about that. And I have seen people who worry about it. You can do a DB export and DB import, and that will try and fix some of that stuff, but sometimes you end up with the same kind of situation. But since there's no performance impact, I basically recommend not worrying about it.
Okay, thank you very much.
We'll go next to Michael Clark. Please go ahead.
Hi. On slide 13, you mentioned something about, however, it uses unbuffered logging and temp tables are logged when querying the SysMaster database.
Yes.
Is there a way to not have it logged by using with no log?
If you create your own views, yes.
Okay.
But if you're using the views like syslog that are built in, no. But okay. I've actually, I understand that question, and I've done that on some, when I've created my own views or my own very complex queries, yes.
Okay. Thanks.
Once again, as a reminder, that is star 1 on your touchtone phone to signal for any questions. Star 1 at this time. We'll go next to By Heine. Your line is open.
Hi. First of all, I just really say thank you. It's been it's a good presentation. I'm very new to Informix. I've been doing DB2, DBA for about 10 years. I'm looking at the registration right now, and there's some session that that's very interesting in me that I think wanted to talk about. DB2 crossover to Informix, something like that. Now, on the registration, it asks that you pick 8 sessions. Can you guarantee that if I pick the session, can you guarantee that I will be going to those sessions? And if so, how long for each session do you know?
First of all, thank you for coming. One of the things that I've been very pleased with, our user group has actually been growing, and it's because of DB2 users coming over to work with Informix, and also Informix users working with DB2. I've found people have to work in both environments. And so I'm very pleased to hear that you're considering coming. What we are doing on the registration, we ask you to pick 8, and we are going to try and schedule things so there'll be as little conflict as possible based on what people pick. I can't guarantee that will happen. But that's why we're asking people to pick 8, is we'll use that data to try and schedule things so there'll be as little conflict as possible. But I'm sorry, I can't guarantee it. Every year I get disappointed. There are always 2 sessions or 3 sessions at the same time I want to go to. Of course, I want to go to all of them.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question will come from Dusan Simic. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Dusan Simic speaking. I have a question, like, this master database, according that your document, page 8, everything is in a resident memory segment. Is there any part of SIF's master database on the disk in root DBS?
Actually, yes, there is. And that's a very important part. Again, just like the part that's in memory, you shouldn't mess with it. The SIS flags table is an actual real table on disk, and there are several other real tables there that are part of it. What I was trying to point out here is most of the tables are views into the memory control structures. And then to help interpret those views, there are some tables that are on disk that are real tables, but most of them are views into the control structures.
It means the first time when you create a server, those tables, like permanent tables, are created in root DBS.
That's correct.
And later on, when we start informing server, they are like not created again, they are used.
That's correct. The first time when you start up a server, it creates the SysMaster database. Or the first time you're doing an upgrade, it automatically goes out and upgrades the SysMaster database. Once they're created, they are not created again. There is a script in Informixter ETC. There's a script called Build SMI that you can look at that shows you how they are created. And there's a script called sysmaster.sql that actually shows you the SQL. And I've learned most of what I have from looking at those two scripts. So if you want to go see how the database is created, that's the place to go look.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the nice presentation.
Thank you.
Have a nice.
Our next question comes from Nancy Balsba. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Hi, Lester. Good presentation.
Well, thank you, Nancy.
I was wondering if you could comment on the usage of update statistics with the querying of DB space in the SysMaster database. We've seen where you really kind of have to be very up-to-date with your update statistics in order to get very accurate data from that. And then also, if you could comment on update statistics for the tables that are in the root DB space.
Okay, let me rephrase that second part. First part is, do you need to do update statistics to get the right information? And the answer is yes. Without running update statistics, and I should have mentioned that in this presentation, some of the information on number of rows in a table will be incorrect. Update statistics is extremely important to get that information correct. And if you have a very dynamic system, again, you have to run that on a regular basis. Do you need to run update statistics on the SysMaster database? Was that your second question, Nancy?
Yeah, I think probably everyone would probably like to know that, if that's an important thing to do. And
no, I don't think that is. It's not used. Remember, the data here is, it gets created with some static data, but most of it is peeking into shared memory. And update statistics isn't going to help peeking into shared memory. So this is like a looking into what's actually in the server right then and there. I don't think there's a need to run update statistics on the SysMaster database.
Any further questions, ma'am?
No, that's it. Thank you.
We'll go next to James Carpenter. Sir, your line is open.
Thank you. Lester, thanks very much for your presentation. And I've been to your presentations before and enjoyed them, and I've been out to your website, got downloaded your scripts, and I'm, you know, I just wish I had more time to put some of them to use, that's all. But I did appreciate your presentation today. Two questions that I hope aren't too complicated. One is that there are times that we would like to see the current SQL that's running on the system, similar to what you can find by doing the onstat-g SQL and then passing it a session ID, to where you can see the last parsed SQL statement. Now, I've tried using a select statement similar to what you have on slide 88, where it goes against the sys-sq explain table, and it doesn't give me the same information as the onstat-g SQL does. It seems to be a little bit more flighty. You know, you run it once, and it comes back and says no rows found, and then you run it again, and it finds 10 or 20 rows, and then you run it again 2 seconds later, and it comes back and finds nothing. So it seems like it's more dynamic, and I'm just wondering if there's a way to get, you know, the current SQL that's running exactly like you would get using the onstat-g SQL. That's question one. And then question two is, we have a problem fairly often with getting extra virtual memory segments allocated. And what we'd like to be able to do somehow is figure out what caused the extra virtual memory segments. We know we can get rid of them with the on mode dash capital F, but that doesn't always clear them all out. And so we're trying to be more proactive and say, what caused the extra segments to get allocated to begin with, so that maybe we can figure out, you know, what we need to do to stop that from happening. Because, you know, we'll be plugging along for days or even weeks with no problem, and then suddenly one day, boom, we get, you know, 10 extra segments allocated, and we'd like to figure out why that happened. So anyway, those are my two, unfortunately, lengthy questions.
They're very good questions. On your question number one, using that SQL, and I've seen what you've described on a very dynamic system, and I had a discussion with one of the engineers once on this. In order for this to be useful, the SysMaster database, they can't afford to lock anything, basically. So it is going to be very dynamic, and you will run things and not see anything. On my first slide, I said you may see inconsistent data, and that's sort of the nature of this. Because for this to be useful, it really, and I think one of their goals was not to impose a penalty on the server by collecting information or locking information. And so that's sort of the flip side of that is, yeah, we get inconsistent data sometimes. And I'm sorry to say I've had to live with that. Actually, your second problem is one I have actually been toying with for the last couple of months on another customer site, same kind of question. And I haven't come up with a good way of looking at what causes that. Memory sorts is one thing that will definitely cause it to grow. Mm-hmm. And I'm still working on this, so I don't have an answer. This is a work in progress. On slide 87, I have a list of what you can get from SQ Explain. Mm-hmm. And taking a look at sorts, particularly memory, you know, the difference between total sorts and disk sorts, I think is one thing. But I don't think that's everything. One of the things I found at one of my sites where this was fairly repeatable was in the very month they had 8 extra segments. They'd come in first of the month, reboot the server, everything would be fine. End of the month, they had eight extra segments. And it was their monthly closing program that did it.
Okay.
They had a monthly closing program they ran every month, and that thing was a hog and caused more memory. And it's usually something, some big batch processing program that seems to trigger it is what I found most of the time.
Okay.
So that's what I'd go look at is what batch type jobs are you running at the same time when you see these extra segments?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
And at this time, we will conclude our question and answer session. If you have questions that were not answered on today's conference call, please email those questions to Lester@advanceddatatools.com. Again, that was Lester@advanceddatatools.com. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference back to our speakers for any additional or closing comments.
Okay, this is again Gary Proctor. First, I'd like to thank Lester Knudsen for, I think, a great talk. Hopefully, you all gained insight and better tips and tools from his talk today. I'd also like to thank the USDA for hosting this chat with the labs. It's always great to get out and talk with our customers and be able to engage and interact with them as well. I'm sure we'll continue a little bit here afterwards. But the I want to thank the attendees for coming and taking the time out of your day to listen to this. I know this has been a pretty successful from a lot of our feedback that we're getting on this. So, again, thank you for that. I do want to encourage you to, if you have the ability or chance to get out to the Informix Forum out in Washington, December 8th and 9th, there's going to be some additional information coming out on Cheetah, leaking some more
can
information.
Can I tell you the best part?
Yeah, go ahead.
Gary's going to have some cool T-shirts. You're going to come back the envy of everybody with these cool T-shirts.
Yeah, so there's a few surprises happening at that conference. So please, I encourage you to come. Also, we have made available to the IIUG download the version 10 UC6 on several platforms. Please encourage, if you haven't downloaded it yourself or want to play with it, please encourage others to download it and continue to spread the to other developers who haven't had a chance to try IDS in an environment. So I want to thank everyone for joining and conclude our chat with the labs.
Thank you, everyone, for your participation on today's conference call. You may disconnect at this time.